30s and gusty west winds. Lows tonight in the mid-20s and mostly cloudy tomorrow. Highs in the mid to upper 30s. Breezy northwest winds 15 to 25.
Good morning. While campaigning for re-election, Donald Trump threatened his critics more than 100 times. We speak with one of them, California's Senator-elect Adam Schiff. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. There's a new nominee for Secretary of Education, Linda McMahon, the former CEO of World Wrestling Entertainment. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin. We take a look at how she might run a branch of a government that conservatives want to shut down. And 3 years ago, cinematographer Helena Hutchins was accidentally killed on the set of Alec Baldwin's film Rust. The film premieres today at a film festival in Poland. But should it? It is Wednesday, November 20th. Joe Biden, the 46th president of the United States, turns 82 years old today. And the news is next.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. President-elect Donald Trump says he'll nominate Dr. Mehmet Oz to run the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin reports Oz is best known for his former Daily Talk show.
Dr. Mehmet Oz, a cardiothoracic surgeon, he built his fame and fortune by promoting alternative therapies like unproven diet products, cleanses, and detoxes. He first became famous as a guest on the Oprah Winfrey Show. That led to a radio show and daytime TV's The Dr. Oz Show. That ended in 2022 when Oz ran as the Republican candidate for Senate in Pennsylvania. He narrowly lost to John Fetterman in that race. If he's confirmed by the Senate, he'll be overseeing an enormous health agency that spends about $1.5 trillion a year. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News, Washington.
President-elect Trump has also nominated Linda McMahon to run the Education Department. She ran the Small Business Administration when Trump was first president. She's a former pro wrestling magnate. Trump also tapped billionaire investor and Wall Street executive Howard Lutnick to run the Commerce Department. Israel is using a new kind of weapon in the war in Gaza, a sniper drone. That's according to more than a dozen eyewitness accounts collected by NPR. As NPR's Kat Lonsdorf reports, witnesses say these are being used to shoot civilians.
For months, NPR has been hearing about a small quadcopter drone with a rifle attached, shooting at civilians, medical professionals, and first responders in Gaza. Several eyewitnesses, including visiting doctors from other countries, have described the technology being used to shoot and sometimes kill civilians, including children. The Israeli military told NPR it was unaware of such incidents and that any suggestion that it intends to harm civilians is, quote, unfounded and baseless. NPR also asked the Israeli military repeatedly if it was using this sniper drone technology in Gaza. It did not respond to the question. But the technology exists, is produced by companies with ties to Israel, and has been touted by the Israeli military in the past. Kat Lonsdorf, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The Texas State Board of Education has moved a step closer to approving a controversial curriculum that puts Bible stories in elementary school classes. From member station KERA in Dallas, Bill Zeeble has more.
The Texas Education Agency proposed a curriculum from Bluebonnet Learning designed to build a broad array of student skills. It incorporates Bible lessons like the Golden Rule. But critics, including Southern Methodist University Religious Studies Professor Mark Chancy, say the focus tilts heavily toward Christianity.
Not only is it taught in such a way that's going to promote some religions over others, but in many cases, it even just gets the basic facts wrong.
The Texas State Board of Education is scheduled to take a final vote on Friday. I'm Bill Zeeble in Dallas.
On Wall Street in pre-market trading, Dow futures are higher. This is NPR. The U.S. has closed its embassy in Ukraine's capital, Kyiv, today. It cited the potential for a Russian air attack. Other embassies in Kyiv are also closed. This came after Ukraine fired U.S.-made long-range missiles into Russia yesterday. The hit by Shaboozy, a bar song Tipsy, tops the pop charts again this week. But NPR's Stephen Thompson reports a seasonal change is brewing.
For months, a bar song has been creeping up on the all-time record for most weeks at number one of any song in Billboard chart history. Now, with 18 weeks at the top, Shaboozy is just a single week away from tying the all-time record. Someone pour me up a double shot of whiskey. There's just one problem. Winter is coming, and with it, a flood of holiday songs that take over the top 10 each year. In fact, this week's Billboard charts issue an early warning, as Wham's 1984 hit Last Christmas re-enters the top 40 at number 38. With Wham, Mariah Carey, and other holiday favorites on deck, Shaboozey's hopes of breaking the record could be headed up in smoke, or more to the point, up the chimney. Stephen Thompson, NPR News.
The co-creator of the computer language BASIC has died in New Hampshire, according to his wife. Thomas Kurtz was 96. He set out to create a simple programming language computer students could use, and he helped develop BASIC in the mid-1960s. Among other innovations, Kurtz designed ways for more than one person to use a computer at a time. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include EBSCO, offering EBSCO Learning, committed to enabling organizations and people seeking to advance their lives and careers to improve their skills and knowledge. Learn more at EBSCOLearning.com.
Whether you're driving, you're at the deer camp, maybe you're on the pontoon, or sitting at your kitchen table, KAXE feels like home.
Hey there, from North Star Elementary in Virginia, Minnesota. And I observed that this is a great year for grouse hunting.
It's been mostly cloudy and rainy with a little bit of snow this week.
With our animal observations, we found deer or rabbit scat and a lot of Asian beetles. We heard crows and another kind of bird.
Most of the deciduous trees have lost their leaves, but the willow trees are still holding on.
This concludes our phenology report. This has been
Symphony,
Mia,
Lydia,
Annalise,
Raven,
Willie,
reporting from Cherry School.
Nature rules!
Our largest source of funding is people like you, listeners. Text the word donate to 218-326-1234. I'm Heidi Holt.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez in Culver City, California.
And I'm Michelle Martin in Washington, D.C. Good morning. Coming up, we'll hear about an alternative to X called Blue Sky. We'll tell you why it's seen an influx of users after Donald Trump's election victory. But first, we'll talk about how Democrats plan to deal with the incoming Trump administration after losing control of both houses of Congress. Complicating that picture are the many threats to investigate, prosecute, imprison, or otherwise punish people that Trump perceives as opponents. An NPR investigation found that during his most recent presidential campaign, Trump made more than 100 of those threats. And one of the targets is California Congressman Adam Schiff, a Democrat who was elected to the Senate earlier this month. He chaired the House Intelligence Committee, where he led the first impeachment inquiry into President Trump, and he was also a member of the House Select Committee that investigated Trump's role in the January 6th mob attack on the Capitol. When he becomes senator, Schiff says he will continue to fight Trump if he tries to erode Democratic norms. Here he is on Inside California Politics.
If he goes after people's rights and freedoms, if he tries to tear down our democracy, then he will find a vigorous opponent.
And he is with us now, Senator-elect Schiff. Welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
So let's start out with those threats that we heard from the now president-elect during his latest campaign. There were quite a few. How seriously do you take that? Is that campaign bluster, or you think it's something else?
Well, look, this is someone who is nominating Matt Gaetz to be attorney general. Anyone who would take an extreme step like that, you can't dismiss what they're saying. But, you know, my focus initially and from the get-go is going to be to try to bring down the cost of goods, bring down the cost of housing and childcare and food and energy. These are things that he also campaigned on. And if he is serious about that, he'll find a willing partner. But okay. If he's serious about his threats, then obviously I'm going to stand up to him. The threats that concern me the most, frankly, are less the ones directed at me and more the ones directed at mass deportations and splitting up families and destroying our economy, as that would accomplish.
So there's an argument made most recently by a conservative lawyer writing in The Atlantic who says that President Biden should issue preemptive pardons given those threats to anybody that Trump has threatened. Do you think he should?
I don't think so. I'm not really sure how that would work. And I have more confidence in our system able to withstand potential abuses of power by the president. Admittedly, some of the guardrails have come down and the Supreme Court took down the most important or one of the most important, that is the ability to hold a president criminally liable for crimes committed in office. But nevertheless, I think the courts are strong enough to withstand, the worst of his threats. And I don't think a preemptive pardon makes sense.
So if the president were to, President Biden were to issue one to you, what would you do? Would you reject it? Or is that a thing? Can you do that?
I think this is frankly so implausible as not to be worthy of much consideration. But I would urge the president not to do that. I think it would seem defensive and unnecessary.
Okay, so let's go to some of the moves that President-elect Trump is making. I mean, he's moving very quickly on some key nominations. You already mentioned one, former Congressman Matt Gaetz. As Attorney General, he resigned abruptly, it would seem. So President Trump is calling on Senate Republicans to go along with his plans for recess appointments. Do you think that they will?
I hope not. If the Senate gives up its power to advise and consent to high-level appointments, then it's essentially given up one of the few remaining checks on the president's power and one of their key responsibilities. We've already seen great damage done to the balance of power. It has tilted very strongly in favor of the executive. And so I hope the senators decide they don't want to sacrifice the institutional safeguard that presents and that key job responsibility. We'll see, though. We have seen repeatedly so many disappointments when you thought that people would protect their own institutional interests. They have sacrificed that on the altar of this very flawed former and soon to be president.
Do Democrats have any recourse if the Republican senators move in that direction?
Well, I think what Democrats ought to do is they ought to provide hearings in a timely way for all these nominees, even those that are patently unqualified or should be disqualified, like Matt Gaetz. They should provide a reasonable and prompt hearing and have an up or down vote on them. And if they do so, then I think there's no justification, cause, or rationale for recess appointments. But I think recess appointments have to be vigorously opposed. Otherwise, we are going to be really doing more damage to our democracy, and another important safeguard will come down.
That is California Senator-elect Adam Schiff. Senator-elect, congratulations. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Hundreds of thousands have left Elon Musk's social media site X since President-elect Donald Trump's victory. X has become a go-to place for fans of Musk and Trump, and those who don't want that are looking for an alternative social media site. For many, that has meant jumping to an app called Blue Sky. NPR's Bobby Allen takes a closer look at what the company is all about.
David Karp's day job is a public affairs professor at George Washington University, but he's also a social media fanatic. He was an early adopter of Blue Sky, a small rival to X, formerly Twitter. He was using both platforms when something clicked for him.
After a few months, I realized that I was going on Blue Sky and laughing, and then I was going on Twitter and obsessively blocking annoying people.
Blocking annoying people, seeing a flood of misinformation and hate speech, being overwhelmed with pro-Trump and pro-Musk content. These have all been reasons why thousands have fled X. In fact, data tracker Sensor Tower found that more than 100,000 people deactivated their X accounts after the election. That's been welcome news to Jay Graber. She's the CEO of Blue Sky. It has seen traffic jump 500% since the election.
We're definitely in a David versus Goliath situation here. We're taking on very large companies with a very small team.
Indeed, Blue Sky is very small, recently surpassing 20 million users compared to the hundreds of millions on X and Meta-owned Threads. And Blue Sky has just 20 full-time employees. But many users are excited about it, and here's why. At first, Blue Sky looks and feels like X, but under the hood, it is quite different. Instead of having one central feed of posts, on Blue Sky you can choose your own adventure. You can pick from three main feeds or search more than 50,000 other feeds people have created.
My concern with the internet is it's just become too controlled by a few powerful interests, and people don't have enough ability to control their own fate. And so we wanted to build social that's built by the people, for the people.
There are no advertisements on Blue Sky, and it doesn't suck up your data to train AI systems. While privacy-conscious users have celebrated this, ads and data are ways of making money. And Karp says that's the big question facing Blue Sky. How do they plan to cover their expenses?
Eventually, they need to figure out, you know, how do we pay for the servers? How do we pay for our employees? How do we sustain this growth?
Blue Sky was dreamed up by Twitter co-founder Jack Dorsey. He gave Blue Sky a grant and a small team to come up with a social media site that has no masters and is controlled by users. Dorsey eventually got annoyed that Blue Sky management created what he said were too many rules, and he quit the board. Now Blue Sky is operating from venture capital funding and is hoping to launch a subscription service to charge people for premium features like the ability to upload higher quality videos. But Graber says the focus now is staying steady with all the new growth. She says one important facet of Blue Sky, it's billionaire-proof, since the underlying technology is open-sourced and owned by nobody.
We can't ever be fully taken over by a billionaire, because even if, you know, something happened to Blue Sky, the company, people can always run their own version of the site.
Experts say Blue Sky could face stress tests as it grows, problems like bots, spam, hate speech, because like all things on the internet, when something gets popular enough, lots of issues follow. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
Israel's military allowed a convoy of 109 trucks carrying desperately needed food aid to cross into Gaza over the weekend. The trucks had to take a route that was unfamiliar and new, according to the UN. But as NPR's Aya Batraoui and Anas Baba report, armed gangs attacked the convoy, stealing the aid and even the fuel in the trucks.
The UN says only 11 trucks in that convoy made it to their intended warehouse.
98 trucks were lost.
Spokesman at the UN, Stefan Dujarric, says it appears to be the biggest looting of UN aid anywhere. He says UN agencies and others don't want to rely on armed escorts in Gaza, fearing they'd become even bigger targets. Instead, they're calling on Israel to allow much more aid into Gaza and to secure the aid routes Israel's military is instructing trucks to take. But Dujarric says,
our repeated calls for the free and safe passage of humanitarian aid in Gaza, that call is falling on deaf ears.
Armed gangs of looters have sprung up near the main crossing from Israel into Gaza. Police who fend them off are killed by Israel, which deems the police part of Hamas, the group it's at war with in Gaza. Israel's also accused Hamas of stealing aid, which the group denies. In southern Gaza, thousands normally flock to this bakery every day. When NPR's producer Anas Baba arrived,
there was no bread distribution or bread selling today in this bakery. The owner of the bakery told him that I don't have any flour, and at the same time there is no gas in order to generate all of the ovens that they do have.
It's one of several now closed. Some men, women, and children wait in the morning sun outside its doors anyway. Among them is Hossam al-Najjar, who's struggling to feed his family of eight. He wakes up before dawn each day in search of pita bread at the few UN-run bakeries still open. He can't afford the flour being sold in the market at $130 a sack. The little aid that's trickling in, much of it being stolen, has driven up prices as gangs grow emboldened in areas under close military surveillance. Israel's military did not respond to NPR's questions on this. Al-Najjar says his son's crying for bread. He says the world is just watching us starve. He says people aren't only being killed in Israeli airstrikes, but in this war of hunger. Aya Batraoui, NPR News Dubai, with Anas Baba in Gaza.
This is NPR News.
It is 6:19. Good morning. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show on KAXE. I'm Jennifer Barr.
Coming up at 6:30, more with Andrew DeZingle and Heather Johnson. Programming is supported by Jennifer Ivanza Insurance, an official Minsure partner. It's open enrollment season, and Jennifer Ivanza Insurance is here to support the Chisholm and Hibbing communities with health plan enrollment and guidance. More information by calling 218-254-3422 or by visiting thenetworkmn.com. We also thank the Bonner Eye Clinic, with locations in Grand Rapids and Hibbing, welcoming Dr. Carlisle to their team, offering lid and cataract surgery, general eye exams, and more. BonnerEyeClinic.com, let us help you see clearly. About a 40% chance for snow today, less than 1 inch of accumulation, highs in the low 30s, gusty west winds up to 25. Snow flurries may continue into the evening, lows in the mid-20s, and for tomorrow, mostly cloudy, highs in the mid to upper 30s, breezy northwest winds 15 to 25. Looking ahead to Friday, mostly cloudy, highs in the low to mid-30s. Support comes from Grand Rapids State Bank, proudly serving the Grand Rapids area for 110 years. More at grsb.bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender. You can answer our question of the week. What are your must-have Thanksgiving dishes? You can share your recipes, too. Text us, 218-326-1234.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from the U.S. Treasury's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, committed to informing that companies may be legally required to file beneficial ownership information. More at fincen.gov/BOI. From Procter & Gamble, maker of Nervive. Nervive Nerve Relief is designed to reduce occasional nerve aches, weakness, and discomfort in hands or feet due to aging. Learn more at nervivehealth.com. From BetterHelp, committed to helping clients with issues ranging from relationship challenges and goal setting to grief and depression. Learn more at betterhelp.com/public. And from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Amy Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin. It's been 3 years since cinematographer Halyna Hutchins was accidentally shot and killed on the set of Rust, a Western starring Alec Baldwin. Despite high-profile trials about her death, production moved forward. And as NPR's Madalit Del Barco reports, Rust is set to premiere today at a film festival in Poland.
Arlen Rust.
Until now, the only footage of Rust to be released have been outtakes shown in court.
Right away, let's reload.
Lead actor and co-producer Alec Baldwin could be seen rehearsing in a cowboy hat and waving a vintage Colt 45 revolver.
Here we go, come on.
Now wait a second, if I'm going to shoot right, do you want to go on the other side of the camera? I don't want to shoot toward you.
While setting up another scene in a church, Baldwin was holding a prop gun that turned out to be loaded with live ammunition. The gun went off, killing Halyna Hutchins and wounding director Joel Souza.
When it happened, there was anger. Believe me, I was angry.
Souza is still recovering from being shot in the shoulder. Last spring, he testified during the trial for armorer Hannah Gutierrez Reed. A New Mexico judge found her guilty of involuntary manslaughter, and she remains in prison. The same judge later dismissed the case against Baldwin. When the production of Rust started back up, this time in Montana, Souza agreed to direct again.
It was a really tough decision, and I'll be very honest, I was a wreck through most of the second go-around. It's something I still struggle with, that I should have or shouldn't have, but, you know, I just feel like, for me, that was the right thing to do.
Souza says he wanted to complete the work he started with Halyna Hutchins.
You know, there are people out there who say, well, I don't want to put money in Baldwin's pocket or the producer's pocket, and I'm like, you're not going to. That's not how this is going to work.
A source close to the production who wasn't authorized to speak publicly says the film's original producers will not gain financially from the movie. As part of a wrongful death settlement, Hutchins' husband, Matt, became an executive producer of the film. The terms of that settlement were sealed, but the source confirms that Hutchins and son Andros will get at least some of the profits the film makes. Cinematographer Bianca Klein donated her pay to charity after stepping in to finish shooting Rust.
It was excruciatingly painful emotionally every day because I wanted to do work that was worthy of Halyna.
Klein says she regularly talks to Hutchins' mother, who lives in Ukraine.
She always reminds me of how excited she was to do a Western, and she thought it was going to be a really great film.
In a statement shared with NPR, Olga Solovey said she had hoped to go to the festival to watch her daughter's film on screen, but she announced yesterday that she refused to attend, saying she didn't want to promote Rust. She said the producers were exploiting Helena's death, and she blamed Alec Baldwin for refusing to apologize or take responsibility. Honoring Hutchins' work is what the organizers of Camera Image say they wanted to do by premiering Rust. Alec Baldwin won't be there. The festival director told NPR that the focus will be on Helena Hutchins. But many in the industry, especially cinematographers, are upset the film will be there at all.
It's really, really in bad taste. There are better ways of honoring that legacy by showcasing the work that she did and not the work that killed her.
Cinematographer Emilia Mendieta Cordova was Hutchins' friend and a classmate at the American Film Institute. She helped plan Hutchins' funeral, and she read aloud a victim impact statement during the Armorer's trial. And she says she doesn't ever want to watch the movie.
There's a section of people who will go see it because of that morbid curiosity of like, oh, this is the film that killed Helena Hutchins, right? All I would see is blood, honestly.
Souza says he can understand the anger, but he hopes audiences will give Rust a chance.
Obviously, the human cost and the tragedy of it overshadows everything, rightfully so, and is so much more important than any movie. I guess I just wonder if people will sort of see past that and engage with it as a film, or if it will be a thing where people just can't ever separate, you know, the movie from what happened during its filming.
Souza says ultimately he's proud of Rust, and he thinks Helena Hutchins would be too. He and Klein plan to be in Poland for the premiere. Mandalit del Barco, NPR News.
Want to let you know that during Alec Baldwin's trial, his attorney argued that others were responsible for letting a live round into the gun in the first place.
In recent months, the list of the nation's top songs has been remarkably unchanging, but this week saw the arrival of a new one by Gracie Abrams. Stephen Thompson of NPR Music has been watching her rise.
On a chart dominated by immovable objects like Shaboozey's A Bar Song and Sabrina Carpenter's Espresso, there hasn't been much room recently for newcomers. So the fact that Gracie Abrams has been able to nudge her new song That's So True into the top 10 suggests that she's leveling up into true pop stardom. It's not that Abrams is coming out of nowhere. A year ago, she was nominated for Best New Artist at the Grammys, and her album The Secret of Us entered Billboard's chart at number 2 this summer. But Gracie Abrams' career has been surging in recent weeks, and there's no denying one major catalyst. She's been opening for Taylor Swift. When people talk about the power Swift wields in the music industry, they often dwell on her lucrative Eras tour, her chart dominance, her Grammy success, and her fan army. But Taylor Swift has also become a dominant force propelling other acts to superstardom, which, as you might have guessed, is incredibly hard to do in 2024. Look at three acts who've opened for her on the Eras tour just this year. Benson Boone is nominated for Best New Artist at the 2025 Grammys. His song Beautiful Things still sits in the top 10 nearly a year after its release. Don't take these beautiful things that I've got. Sabrina Carpenter ranks among the year's biggest breakout stars. She's up for 6 Grammys and had 3 songs in the top 10 at the same time for weeks on end this summer. Now, Gracie Abrams has her own top 10 single for the first time in her career. Naturally, Taylor Swift isn't the only superstar with long coattails. Another singer up for Best New Artist at the Grammys is Chappell Roan. She experienced a colossal lift when she opened for Olivia Rodrigo earlier this year. These days, you don't just need music industry executives on your side, and viral success on TikTok isn't enough. If you're looking to become a superstar, your best bet is a big-time, hard-touring benefactor. Stephen Thompson, NPR Music.
This is NPR News.
What's going on inside our brains when we have disagreements or tense conversations?
So we have this mixture of anxiety and anger, and over time, that becomes resentment and contempt.
But there are ways to override those reactions. I'm Juana Summers. Catch our series, Seeking Common Ground, on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And you can hear All Things Considered this afternoon at 4 p.m. Good morning. I'm Andrew DeZingle, and I'm here with Heather Johnson.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. So just a heads up, everybody.
Oh, no.
I'm sort of, my voice comes in and out. Right now, it seems to be doing all right.
I think if you hadn't pointed it out, I think everybody would have been cool with it.
I don't know. I just want everyone to know that I'm aware I sound different.
Yeah, it's a little froggy, but it's okay. We like frogs.
I love frogs. Michigan J Frog.
He's one of the best.
Frog and Toad Frog.
Frog and Toad.
What are some other famous frogs?
Famous frogs at 6:30 in the morning, Andrew? Are you kidding me? I'll have a think.
Ribbit from Star Fox.
Oh my gosh, you could just keep going.
Anyway, we're here until 9 o'clock, and then we're going to hand things over to DJ the DJ for On the River. We've got quite the show for you today.
Yeah.
We got the vinyl from the vault pick coming up later in the show. Up North Report, Phonology Report, and my conversation area voices with Shevlin artist Isabel Harmon.
Sounds like some good stuff. Did you close the vault back up very carefully after you got your record?
No, you don't close it until you put the record back in.
Oh, okay. So it's
so
open
not
right
until
now?
8:35 will we close the vault.
Okay. Well, I hope no marauders get in before then.
If you had a vault.
Yes.
What kind of vault would you have? Would you rather have a keypad one or the spinning?
No, you need the thing. You need the spinning. I'm sure there's a name for it. I don't know what it is. But like the movie spinny thing where it goes click, 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 click.
Yeah, and then you have to use a doctor's hearing thing to like figure out what it is. Yeah, stethoscope.
To figure out what the combination is. Yep. Yeah. Obviously. Come on.
So we got that for us. Also, looking at things going on today, the Bemidji Community Theaters presents Scrooge, a musical adaptation of A Christmas Carol, going on now through November 24th. Tickets available at BemidjiCommunityTheater.com. I know, Heather, you have a special connection
with the musical. I've seen it twice, and I will probably see it at least twice more because my son plays the youngest Ebenezer Scrooge.
Ooh.
So, yes.
So we'll talk about that more later.
Absolutely.
Weather today, snow, as you can clearly see right now outside, and cloudy skies, highs 26 to 33 degrees, light west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour, evening lows in the upper 20s, low 30s, with northwest winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Thursday, cloudy, highs in the mid to high 30s, northwest winds up to 10 to 15 miles per hour, evening lows in the mid to high 20s. Now it's time for National Native News.
From my palm. Thank you.
that they've never been. And I stopped looking backwards and started keeping my eyes on the road again. Well, there's a Lincoln in my blind spot, and there's a caddy on my
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Joe Biden has created more national monuments in a single term than any president since Jimmy Carter left office in 1981. Tribes and environmental advocates are pressing him to do even more. The Mountain West News Bureau's Rachel Cohen reports.
After President Donald Trump shrunk the Bears Ears and Grand Staircase Escalante monuments in Utah, Biden's first step was restoring them.
And because of that, he really started thinking about monuments right from the get-go. So you see much more activity than you see usually during the first term.
Justin Padeau is a professor at the University of Arizona Law School who worked in the Biden and Obama administrations. He says Biden has had a particular focus on monuments proposed by tribes. That includes Avikwame, established last year in Nevada. It's a site sacred to the Fort Mojave Indian tribe, among others. Before leaving the White House, Biden could designate more national monuments. Local campaigns are advocating for protection of the Owyhee Canyon lands on the border of Oregon and Idaho and the Dolores Canyons in southwest Colorado. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Rachel Cohen.
The Aleutic Museum received about $150,000 to revamp the Koniak Cultural Library. The grant comes as it's finishing construction on its new building. As KMXT's Brian Venwa reports, staff say it's good timing to have even more to show off at its future grand reopening.
The Aleutic Museum has been closed for over a year for an expansion project to nearly double its size. Museum officials plan to display more items from its collections as well as feature more art from contemporary culture bearers. But now with this grant from the Institute of Museum and Library Sciences, the museum will make it easier than ever to access its library, too.
In the past, we had a library. I don't think anyone knew that.
That's Amanda Lancaster, the museum's curator of collections. Since 2018, the library has served as the official tribal library of Koniag, Kodiak's Regional Native Corporation.
It was in the basement. It was very inaccessible. You had to make an appointment. You had to have a staff member with you just because it was in the basement and, you know, sort of a more of a staff space.
The library features thousands of printed materials, hundreds of audiovisual items, and well over 10,000 photos as part of the collection for people to research Aleutic culture. The new funding will help the museum pay for renovations for a more friendly library space. Lancaster says they're aiming to have matching shelving units, furniture for a seating area, and computers for research. Patrons won't need appointments or staff supervision just to be in there. They'll just need to check in at the front desk and use the library at their leisure.
We're just hoping that it will make it much more accessible, that people will want to come and use it.
While the new money won't cover new acquisitions, it could make room for future donations.
But it's going to be much larger and much more spacious and space to sit and read, and I think it's just going to be a really nice space.
It's also a reason to recatalog and reorganize all of those resources.
I'm just really excited to have one sort of dedicated project where we make sure everything's in the right space. You know, we have this genealogical resources because that's something people have asked for over and over and over again.
After the renovations, the grant will also pay for an outreach effort to solicit comments on how to make the library as useful as possible. The Aleutic Museum is set to have a grand reopening in May. In Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
California will remove the SQ word, a derogatory term for an indigenous woman, from more than 30 sites. The state's Natural Resources Agency announced last week, the LA Times reports. In 2022, Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill into law requiring the term to be removed from all geographic features and place names in the state. It follows a similar move by U.S. Interior Secretary Deb Haaland, who declared the term derogatory in 2021 and established a process to remove names from federal lands. Renaming in California is expected to take place in early 2025. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kohonic Broadcast Corporation, funded by the Annie Berg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle, here with Heather Johnson.
Good morning.
Coming up in a little bit, we're going to be hearing about some radio hosts that talk about controversial topics and appreciation for Arthur Frommer, who died this week at 95.
Nice.
We receive support from the Mental Health Crisis Response Team of Itasca County. This crisis intervention service is a program of first call for help 211 and provides free crisis assessments, stabilization services, referrals, and resourcing to residents of any age who are in crisis. They are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by dialing 211.
And we receive support from Dale's Auto Body, serving the auto body needs of Grand Rapids and surrounding communities since 1984, performing auto body and collision repair as well as auto glass replacement, dedicated to getting you back on the road after an accident. More information online at dalesautobodyinc.com.
And support comes from Paul Blending Communications, powered by the Gigazone, offering fiber optic fast internet speeds up to 10 gig and Gigazone Blast Wi-Fi, featuring Wi-Fi 6 technology to support devices wirelessly.
And we receive support from the First State Bank of Big Fork and their Kellier branch, banking that fits the customer's sense of adventure, offering tools for managing money on any mobile device. Member FDIC.
So coming up in a bit, we're going to be talking, we got the Up North Report at the top of the hour, and later in about 2 hours, we have my conversation with Isabel Harmon, who is a painter from Shevlin, Heather, have you ever dabbled in painting?
Absolutely. I do paint when I have some time. And I enjoy that. I do acrylic painting sometimes and watercolor.
What kind of subjects are we talking here?
Could be anything. Sometimes it's more imaginary things. Sometimes it's...
Imaginary things?
Well, yeah.
Like dragons?
No. a chicken in a spaceman helmet,
oh,
for one.
I want to see that.
I hope your expectations are low. Breaking news, Mary from Cass Lake pointed out an egregious omission from our list of famous frogs.
Uh-oh.
Kermit.
Oh, that's right.
Good
Probably
morning,
the
Mary.
Most famous
Thank
frog
you so
of all.
Much. Oh, my goodness. What were we thinking?
Thank you, Mary.
Yeah, and you paint frogs.
Yeah,
so,
I do.
And you use acrylic paint?
Yep, I use acrylic. And then do you sketch out before you
Usually.
Paint it?
Usually, yeah. It just depends on, you know, what I'm in the mood for, what kind of technique I want to try, things like that.
All right. So let us know your techniques in painting. You can text us at 218-326-1234. And we also have our question a week. What's your must-have Thanksgiving dish? So share your recipes. Text us at 218-326-1234. Now more from National Public Radio.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin in Washington, D.C.
And I'm A. Martinez in Culver City, California. In Pittsburgh, residents have been at odds over how to approach seemingly stubborn challenges such as crime, drug addiction, and homelessness. But a pair of political firebrands are finding a way to talk through their differences. Oliver Morrison of member station WESA has this next installment of Seeking Common Ground, our NPR network-wide series about people talking over the political divide.
Bethany Hallam is a county counselor who has spent much of her effort trying to help people who live in the county jail, who are homeless or addicted to drugs. She's a Democrat, but she doesn't think the party is doing enough.
I see the Republican Party pushing further and further to the right, and the Democratic Party chasing them to the right, as opposed to moving to the left, where not just myself, but I see younger generations being as well.
Marty Griffin is a radio talk show host in Pittsburgh. In the last couple of years, he's been on a mission to highlight problems in the city's downtown. But he sometimes had to defend his approach.
Is it fair for me, though, to show homeless folks and drug dealers and tents surrounding the city and back on the trails in downtown? Is that fair?
Hallam was one of the people who didn't like Griffin's approach. She thought it was dehumanizing and dangerous. In response, Griffin asked Hallam to go downtown in person and defend her position live on video. Hallam agreed, and for more than 30 minutes, they argued. During the debate, Griffin brought up a person who had recently been arrested and released 4 times.
And he's out now.
Okay. Was he convicted?
No.
Okay.
He's
so
waiting.
There you go.
He's
so
waiting.
Innocent. No. So you're putting an innocent man's name
he
out
groped,
the news.
He groped 4 women in a week. He's
Do
been
we,
formally charged.
In this country, you were innocent until proven guilty.
The video has been viewed more than 135,000 times, many times more than the previous videos Griffin made about downtown. In part because of this big response, they made several more videos of their debates. And that was a big change. A few years ago, they saw each other as enemies. Hallam thought Griffin was a sensationalist. And for a time, Griffin thought Hallam made her political arguments too personal, including sometimes calling out a friend of his in office during official county business.
She'll call people liars, and she'll call them horrible people, and she went after him personally.
To some extent, these issues are personal to Hallam. She's a former heroin addict who spent 5 months behind bars, and she has made reforming the jail her biggest cause. That came up in another video where they argued about the color of inmate uniforms outside the county jail.
This color looks good on you. I would call this lime green. What would you call this?
Hallam had pushed to change the color of inmate uniforms to create a better atmosphere inside. Griffin thought it was a waste of money. But in their video, Hallam convinced Griffin to try the uniform on.
Very calming. I'm actually feeling calmer standing next to
Some of Hallam and Griffin's biggest fans and even closest friends didn't want them to engage. Tanisha Long is an organizer for a nonprofit in Pittsburgh that pushes for criminal justice reform. She works closely with Hallam.
I was so mad. I was like, Bethany, why?
But Griffin and Hallam's conversations nudged them to make small changes in their views and actions. Griffin began to blur out the faces of the homeless people in his videos after Hallam asked. And he says that he's recently begun to question his own law and order approach to issues facing downtown.
She opened my eyes. You can't arrest your way out of a lot of this stuff. You can't. And she changed my mind in a big way about that.
Griffin has also changed Talon. She believes all drugs should be legalized, for example, and that prisons should be abolished. But through their conversation, she now frames her ideas in terms of public safety.
Marty convinced me that you're not going to win any support by being an abolitionist. The people who are abolitionists, most of them already are.
As Hallam and Griffin sparred, their talks forged an unlikely friendship. Griffin will sometimes ask Hallam her opinions or text Hallam unsolicited advice. Mike Mikus is a political operative in Pittsburgh who advised two campaigns against Hallam and lost. He thinks the conversations have had a positive impact, even if their arguments haven't changed anyone's views.
The biggest takeaway for me is it shows you can disagree. You can be not even close politically, but you can carry yourself in a way that is friendlier, more compassionate for the other side.
Both Hallam and Griffin have been criticized for their sometimes extreme conduct in pursuit of what they see as their righteous causes. Though they don't agree on most issues, they've adapted their friendship to talk through them. A couple weeks before this year's election, they were on opposite sides of a local tax issue. Hallam thought taxes needed to be raised, and Griffin thought it was too much.
We're actually friends.
People hate that about us.
I just don't care.
I don't either.
By the end of the video, they agreed that the ultimate solution would likely be a tax increase that wasn't quite so large. They still don't agree on much, but now at least they hear each other out. For NPR News, I'm Oliver Morrison in Pittsburgh.
So, a question. Do you think you could travel through Europe on $5 a day?
$5 a day? No. I mean, is that even possible?
Well, apparently it was at one time, decades ago, and we know this because of Arthur Frommer, who died this week at the age of 95. Now, even if you don't travel a lot, you might know the name from his series of guidebooks for budget travelers, and they changed the way a lot of people thought about travel, especially his first bestseller.
He wrote Europe on $5 a day in 1957.
That's his daughter, Pauline Frommer.
Yes, it was possible then. In fact, people would write to him, and the most common letter he would get was, $5 a day, I did it for $2.50. I'd say it still is possible if you take part in the sharing economy.
Our father's love for cheap travel began in the 1950s when he was drafted into the U.S. Army during the Korean War. He was stationed in Europe and found himself wanting to travel on his very small army salary.
There was a notion that only the very rich could travel to Europe. All of his fellow GIs were terrified to leave the base. They didn't think they'd be able to travel safely without a lot of money. And he wrote a little book called The GI's Guide to Europe. It sold out within the Army almost overnight.
So when he finished his service in the Army, Arthur Frommer published Europe on $5 a day, and it changed his life.
My father truly believed that often you traveled better without a lot of money, that money could put a barrier between yourself and the country or destination you were visiting.
In 2012, Pauline began running Frommer Media alongside her father, and the pair published several guidebooks. Pauline says her father believed that travel was a privilege, and if you're spending too much, you're probably not doing it right. This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm E. Martinez.
And I'm Michelle Martin.
And you are listening to the Wednesday Morning Show. I'm Andrew DeZingle here with Heather Johnson.
Good morning. I can't believe it's Wednesday already.
Really?
Yeah.
I feel like it took forever to get to Wednesday.
Really?
Just kidding.
I don't know what day it is. I woke up.
You thought it was Tuesday.
There is snow on the ground. I didn't know what planet I was on. Well, I mean, I had a good inkling, but, you know.
Yeah, what did you think it was?
I don't know. I was very groggy. It's cold, and I kind of wanted to go back to sleep. But then I remembered, morning show, come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, what's more fun than the morning
exactly
show?
Exactly. Nothing.
So speaking of fun things, when we host the Wednesday Morning Show, we like to look at what the national day is.
Well, we like to celebrate. We don't want to miss anything.
Yeah, so of course we have National Peanut Butter Fudge Day.
Oh, not a fan. How about you?
I could eat peanut butter fudge.
Okay. like homemade?
I'll eat any kind. Okay. If it's not hard, I'll eat it.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good.
National Child's Day?
Child's. Is that like
I think it's a day for children.
Or is it a day for like Julia Child and her relatives?
Oh, it's definitely not that.
Oh, okay.
And all the potential represented by our children's ambitions, dreams, and goals.
Oh, that's a nice thing to celebrate.
And then, most importantly, it's National GIS Day, Geographic Information Systems Day.
Well, as a geocacher, I can appreciate that.
You're a geocacher.
Yes, absolutely. Running around in the woods looking for old peanut butter jars filled with little slips of
peanut butter fudge.
No, hopefully not. And hopefully they were washed very well. Otherwise, the bears have definitely already gotten into them.
Oh, no.
Yes.
What's the coolest thing you found in one of these jars?
Oh, well, that's a really good question. There have been, some people make like little homemade trackers that go around the world so you can pass them on the next time you're traveling.
How do you pass them on? Like put them in a
different container? You just put them in a different geocache and then somebody else picks them up and moves them along to where you want them to go. So that's probably one of my favorite things. But it's kind of more about the puzzle and about sometimes the container or where it's hidden or where it takes you. Mm. Because there are all these amazing hidden spots that you wouldn't know about, or at least I wouldn't know about, if it weren't for geocaching. So, yeah, one of my favorites is it's a Star Trek-themed geocache, and you actually end up, it's like in an elasticized cord, and you end up launching the container out of a bigger container that's in a tree.
Oh.
Kind of like a slingshot sort of situation. And that was really neat, very memorable.
What device do you use to...
Yeah, I just use an app on my phone, and you sign up with the geocaching app, and it's a great family activity. We started when my son was little, and just kind of little kids like to go treasure hunting, you know. even if the treasure is just, you get to sign a piece of paper. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. So I appreciate the GIS Day.
Well, today's the day to celebrate it.
Also, as a person who gets lost constantly.
And then our final one, it's National Absurdity Day.
Oh, yeah, that's right in my wheelhouse.
The absurd. Perhaps a chicken in an astronaut.
In an astronaut helmet, yes. Not the full uniform, because, I mean, how would that fit a chicken? Come on, Andrew.
So today we're supposed to celebrate the oddness and weirdness and let it take over. We're not sure why, but it does. So they listed some interesting facts here, and by interesting, at least one interesting fact.
Okay.
So back in 1913, when the Postal Service first launched, children falling within the shipping weights were sent across country by parcel service.
Oh.
Mailed babies were shipped off to grandma's house, some for as low as 15 cents plus insurance. Can you imagine that?
No. That is absurd. For sure. I don't understand.
Like, do they actually put them in a package?
It sounds like it. I don't know.
And cross country? Like, don't they have to feed the baby?
Well, maybe babies were just a lot hardier then. I mean, they are hardier than, you know, you would think sometimes.
Well, let's say you mail them to grandma's house. Yes. And then, like, they gain too much weight at grandma's house.
Oh, no.
And they can't be mailed back. What do you do?
I can't afford to ship the baby back. I guess you just got to keep him at grandma's and raise him at grandma's.
I guess.
I don't know.
That's how it happens.
That's super weird.
So what are you going to do for National Absurd Day?
I'm just going to be myself, man.
So we receive support from the Bagley Area Arts Collaborative, offering community exhibits, workshops, and many upcoming events, announcing new classes beginning in January, offering a two-day acrylic landscape workshop on January 24th and 25th, a Mandela painting class on February 1st, and an alcohol inks workshop on February 20th. All are welcome to attend. More at BagleyArts.org or on